7:16 the time, Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed show, and we're going to unravel something today that that really it kind of affects me because we've spoken to people involved in this on the program before, and I'm talking, of course, of the family of Paul Rusesabagina. So let me tell you this. Not only are we going to discuss specifically how it has affected the daughters, the American daughter in particular of Paul Rusesabagina, but how this malware is affecting people across the country. We're going to actually try, and as we move through the day, try and break down the malware itself. I'm not sure if you heard, but yesterday journalists in dozens of countries broke the story that military-grade surveillance technology, initially believed to be used for criminals and terrorists, was weaponized against journalists, political rivals, activists, and lawyers from all around the world, and in here in the United States as well. The revelation of this misuse of what's called Pegasus is a surveillance software licensed and sold by the Israeli spyware firm NSO Group. And it's now, this morning, as we wake up, we see it's stirred outrage across the world. 17 news outlets collaborated for months to publish a comprehensive and aggressive expose of the scope of Pegasus' jarring breach of privacy. So we'll go over exactly this breach, and let's specifically start with guests that have been here on the program here on this show. And I'm talking, of course, of the American daughter of Paul Rusesabagina, the imprisoned Rwandan activist. You may remember he inspired the film Hotel Rwanda. Don Cheadle played the role. She's been the victim of near constant surveillance, according to a forensic analysis of her mobile phone that found evidence of multiple attacks using this NSO group spyware. Her name is Karine Kanimba, a U.S. and Belgian dual citizen. Again, she's been here on the program. We've spoken to her before. She's been leading her family's effort to free her father from prison following Paul Rusesabagina's abduction and forced return to Kigali last year by the government of Rwandan president strongman Paul Kagame. Amnesty International's forensic analysis found that Kanimba's phone had been infiltrated since at least January of this year. And you may remember, I'm pretty sure we spoke in March, and this might be just a few months ago. Our marketing director, Jane Herring, brought me a story that she's been personally involved with since long before any of us saw it on our radar. And it, of course, was the story of Paul Rusesabagina. And what he did was he saved 1,300 refugees by housing them in the hotel that he managed at the time. Since then, hated and hunted by Paul Kagame, the authoritarian and unapologetically corrupt dictator of Rwanda, Rusesabagina is a Texas resident. He was kidnapped by this rogue military strongman, and the world has really been silent. And from what we're finding out now, the harassment isn't just of Paul, it's of his family as well. So as we get into this, it strongly suggests that the Kagame government, which has long been suspected of being a client of the Israeli surveillance firm NSO, has been able to monitor this 28-year-old's private calls and discussions with U.S., European, and British government officials. A spokesperson for the Rwandan government said the country does not use this software system and doesn't possess this technical capability in any form. Later on in the program, we will show, give you evidence of the contrary, evidence to the contrary. A phone infected with NSO malware, as Kanimba's has been, not only gives users of the spyware access to this phone, they give it access to everything, calls, messages, accounts, everything. It can turn a mobile phone into a portable tracking and listening device. And in the period before she was alerted to this, her phone, you know, her phone being hacked, she said she had contacts with U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs, British MPs, and the U.K. High Commission Office in Rwanda, all of which could have been monitored. She also held talks with the Baroness Helena Kennedy, a barrister and member of the House of Lords. So the forensic evidence suggests the spying began in January, before as they came onto the program, before she came here to the show to talk, though it might have been earlier. And it paused in May for a while she was here in the U.S. and resumed again on June 14th. the day that she met the Belgian foreign affairs minister, Sophie Wilmes. Sources in the minister's office said no sensitive information was shared in that meeting. And just to understand and make it clear, Rusesabagina is a Belgian national, widely credited, of course, as I told you, with saving more than 1,300 people during the Rwandan genocide. And he became a vocal critic of Kagame and was living in the U.S. and Belgium until his arrest by the Rwandan government last year. And he's facing life in prison after being accused of terror-related charges and being lured back into the country on a speaking engagement by a friend, a doctor. So he's 67 years old. And of course, he and his family staunchly deny any of the allegations that the Rwandan government is putting out. And in an interview, a journalism partner in the Pegasus Project, Kanimba, described how the diplomatic effort to have her father released began from the moment she and her family discovered he'd been kidnapped, with calls to every single member of the European Parliament and every member of the Belgian Parliament, as well as several human rights organizations. And the way she describes it is that in 1994, during the genocide, the way her father was able to protect people in the hotel was that he made calls every day with the last working telephone in the hotel. And they went on and followed that example. They did the exact same thing. News of this hacking campaign is going to heighten scrutiny of the Rwandan government's treatment of Paul Rusesabagina, which is probably a good thing that the world will now focus maybe a little more on it. And this is at a time when some U.S. lawmakers have pushed for Joe Biden's administration to put more pressure on Kagame to release him and to protect Rwandans here in the United States from harassment, exactly this kind of harassment. Rwanda, as I mentioned, has long been suspected of being an end user of this NSO malware with a history of targeting dissidents at home and abroad. Back in 2019, at least six dissidents connected to Rwanda were warned by WhatsApp that they'd been targeted by spyware made by the NSO in an attack that affected hundreds of users around the world over a two-week period from April to May that year. So, I'll close it with this, that Rusesabagina, who's been referred to as Africa's Schindler, really, the comparisons are apt, is alleged by family members to have been tortured in the days after his rendition. Rwandan authorities have denied that he was kidnapped or mistreated while in custody. And as we move through this morning, we'll discuss exactly how we found out that the Rwandan government did in fact purchase this malware, did in fact go to the NSO to purchase this Israeli malware. And how it's used and the technology behind it and how it can actually just rip apart your Apple phone, basically, is what it does. I think that's the best description to show you how it gets into your phone. 7:25 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show. 7:35 the time, 25 minutes shy of 8 o'clock, Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed Show. And a lot of stuff to talk about this morning. We opened the program, of course, talking about Karine Kanimbe, daughter of Paul Rusesabagina, and the fact that we now know that her phone, her communications have been hacked by a malware that is sold by the Israeli NSO. We had this both sisters on our program, and in an interview, her sister Anaïs Kanimba, Karine's sister, said her entire family had felt that they were under constant watch by the Kagame government, by the Rwandan government. In one case, she said her and her family had reason to suspect that their emails were being monitored after her father's lawyer was searched during a prison visit following a private communication from the family about an affidavit that he wanted Rusesabagina to sign that would attest to his allegation of torture. The search, by the way, appeared to be focused on finding that particular affidavit. So the hack is just much larger in scope than a single family. Human rights activists across the world, journalists and lawyers, have been targeted by authoritarian governments using this hacking software that is sold by the Israeli surveillance company NSO. So the investigation by 17 media organizations suggests widespread and continuing abuse of NSO's hacking spyware, which is called Pegasus, which the company, by the way, insists it only intended for use against criminals and terrorists. Well, some of these strongmen, some of these dictators in some of these countries are using them for their own benefit, their own political benefit. So Pegasus is a malware that infects iPhones and Android devices to enable operators of the tools to extract messages, photos, and emails, to record calls and secretly activate microphones. So this leak that we learned of yesterday contains a list of more than 50,000 phone numbers that are believed to have been identified as those of people of interest by clients of NSO since way back in 2016. So there's a Forbidden Stories is a Paris-based nonprofit media organization, and Amnesty International, they initially had access to the leaked list and shared access with media partners as part of the Pegasus Project. It's a reporting consortium. The presence of a phone number in the data doesn't really reveal whether a device was infected with Pegasus or subject to an attempted hack. However, the consortium believes the data is indicative of the potential targets that NSO's government's clients identified in advance of possible surveillance attempts. So, forensics analysis of a small number of phones whose numbers appeared on the leaked list also showed more than half had traces of this Pegasus spyware. More than half. And all of these media partners, the 17 media partners, will be revealing the identities of people whose numbers appeared on the list in the coming days. This is reported in The Guardian this morning. They include hundreds of business executives, religious figures, academics, NGO employees, union officials, and government officials, including cabinet ministers, presidents, and prime ministers. The list also contains a number of close family members of one country's ruler, suggesting the ruler may have instructed their intelligence agencies to explore the possibility of monitoring their own relatives. And more than likely, fingers are pointing at Saudi Arabia there. The list also contains a number of, disclosures began on Sunday with the revelation that the numbers of more than 180 journalists are listed in this data, including reporters and editors and executives from the Financial Times and CNN and New York Times, a company called France 24, The Economist, Associated Press, and Reuters. The phone number of a freelance Mexican reporter, Cecilio Piñera Berto, was found in the list, apparently of interest to a Mexican client in the weeks leading up to his murder. And when his killers were able to locate him at a car wash, that was it, dead. His phone has never been found, so no forensic analysis has been possible to establish whether or not it was infected with this malware. NSO has said that even if Piñera's phone had been targeted, it didn't mean the data collected from his phone contributed in any way to his death. No, that was just coincidence, stressing that governments could have discovered his location by other means. He was among at least 25 Mexican journalists apparently selected as candidates for surveillance over a two-year period. So the consortium's analysis of the leaked data identified at least 10 governments to be NSO customers who were entering numbers into a system. And those governments are Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Kazakhstan, Mexico, Morocco, Rwanda, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, India, and the United Arab Emirates. Analysis of the data suggests also that NCO client countries that had selected the most numbers, more than 15,000, was Mexico, where multiple different government agencies are known to have bought Pegasus. Mexico on that list of both Morocco, by the way, Morocco and key allies to the United States also on that list. So we'll dig a little deeper into these particular countries, why they might want it as we move forward in the program. But this is some pretty stark stuff this morning. 7:41. 7:53 the time, Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed Show. We're spending this first hour discussing the malware, the Israeli-sold NSO malware that's been infecting phones of journalists and political activists and human rights activists around the world. And we're just discovering this in a leak yesterday. from 17 news organizations that have been following this closely. And a lot of you have had a lot of questions. And I think the most common question is how this malware is detected. And really, it's almost impossible to detect. And if I can, as a pedestrian, just kind of explain how it gets into your phone, and it doesn't matter whether it's an Android or an iPhone, essentially, you'll receive a message. And it's not like you have to click a link and it opens up malware and infects your phone. You don't even realize you've received the, it's not a message that stays on your message received board. It's not a message that stays there. It's nothing that you go to and open up and link to. It is a message that quickly flashes into your system, whether or not it shows up on your screen, but it infects like a virus. There's no other way to put it. It latches on, it quickly infects, and then it disappears from any detection ability that you'll have to get on and find out that your phone has been affected. So without a forensic examination of mobile devices, it's impossible to say whether phones are subjected to an attempted or successful hack using Pegasus. The NSO has always maintained it doesn't operate systems that it sells to vetted government customers and doesn't have access to the data of its customers' targets. And, you know, in statements issued through their lawyers, they denied claims made about the activities of the clients that they sell to. They say the company sells only to military, law enforcement, and intelligence agencies. Oh, and oh, by the way, 40 unnamed countries as well. It says it rigorously vets its customers and their human rights records before allowing them to use its spy tools. Well, that wouldn't be the case. We read off the 10 countries that have used the malware. We know several of them have horrific human rights records, including Rwanda. And in fact, among the Rwandans that the Pegasus project had found were listed in the data of the 50,000 names as candidates for possible surveillance was a guy by the name of David Himbara. David Himbara, an economist who formerly worked for Kagame in Rwanda, but later fled and sought protection in Canada. Himbara was questioned he's questioned claims of stellar economic growth over the years there. He was calling the figures a fantasy. And what he says is the lifestyle forced on me is a preoccupation to avoid becoming another victim of Kagame's death warrant. I do not take personal security for granted, and even though the distance between Toronto, Canada, where I live, and Kigali, Rwanda, is 11,000 kilometers, to be precise, I still worry about that. A forensic analysis of Himbara's mobile phone by Amnesty International hasn't yet found any evidence that it was successfully hacked. It's not clear from leaked records which client country selected Himbara as a potential target. But yeah, so the fact that the NSO is saying that they're not selling this to rogue governments just doesn't bear out. It's just not true. 7:57 the time.